For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. Cutting through the clutter, this is the Misty Winston Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, it's Friday. We made it. We made it through the week. Yay. It's been a rough week. I'm not going to lie, guys. I've been sick all week. It's been a rough one. But we made it. It's Friday. Happy weekend to everybody. I hope everybody enjoys their weekend. I do have another great show lined out for you tonight. But before we jump into that, oh my God. Okay. So yesterday was the anniversary of the My Lai Massacre. On the 20th, it's the anniversary of the Iraq War, and the International Criminal Court decided to put out an arrest warrant for Vladimir Putin. Oh my gosh, it makes me giggle. Listen, and that's not to say that Vladimir Putin has not committed war crimes. Of course he has. War is a war crime. Like, it's not, you know, like, it's ridiculous. Of course, there are war crimes that happen in war, period, end of story. But the idea that the ICC right now at this particular moment in time is putting out an arrest warrant for Vladimir Putin over alleged war crimes. There isn't one for Zelensky, who also has committed lots of war crimes. We've seen photographic and video evidence of those. But there's never been an arrest warrant. Where's the arrest warrant for George W. Bush? That's what I want to know. I want to know where the arrest warrant is for George W. Bush. We've never seen that. We're never going to see that because the United States signed the Hague Invasion Act, where if anybody tries to hold George W. Bush or any of the war criminals from our country accountable, we'll just invade the Netherlands. That's how we'll handle that. We'll just invade the Netherlands. And it's ridiculous that we have to even have this conversation. I'm so tired of the just rampant hypocrisy. It is gross. The hypocrisy in this country is so, if you are the United States of America, if you live in the United States of America, you do not get to finger wag to anybody else about war crimes. You just do not. And I will say it again, the entirety of what Vladimir Putin has done in Ukraine in the past year is a regular Tuesday to the United States of America. Again, how many countries are we currently illegally invading and occupying? How many genocides are we currently involved in and funding and arming? We're arming Nazis in Ukraine. Seriously, how many countries are we sanctioning to the point of starvation of children and women and all of that stuff that we claim to care about? It's mind-blowing to me that we think we have moral superiority over anyone. Clean your own house first. It is so, it just frustrates me. It frustrates me to the point where I can't even find words because it feels like we have never learned anything. Like Iraq, again, we're coming up on the 20-year anniversary and nothing was learned. Nothing. Nothing. All of that for nothing. We're doing it again. We're going through almost the exact same situation again. The exact same lot. I mean, listen, y'all, they're even regurgitating the same propaganda. The Viagra, the same stuff, the same crap that they sold you before. They're selling you again under, you know, a new facade, and people are buying it. And it's, I don't know what that is. I know that propaganda is very strong, but are humans really that dumb? I can't let myself think that human beings are just that stupid. Come on. It's not that difficult. This is, to me, it's so blatantly obvious what's going on in Ukraine. It's so blatantly obvious what's always going on in these situations. We're never the good guys. We don't care about humanitarian causes. We don't care about the people of Ukraine. Y'all, we don't even care about the people of this country. The people of East Palestine, Ohio, we don't care about them. And I'm supposed to believe we care about the people of Ukraine? Of course we do not. So listen, if you want to put out an arrest warrant for Vladimir Putin for his war crimes, fine, whatever. The more war criminals that are held responsible, the better. But let's not pretend that this is, you know, like a just or a good or a reasonable action under the given circumstances. And as Caitlin Johnstone pointed out, as she always does, she's always brilliant at this kind of stuff and kind of putting it into sharp relief. She said, it's not a whataboutism. This is a tweet she put out today. You can follow her at Kate Oz on Twitter. She's phenomenal. Highly recommended follow. She said, it's not whataboutism to say it's absurd to charge Putin with war crimes without charging Bush. It is a completely devastating argument against the claim being made. If the law doesn't apply to everyone, then it's not the law. It's just corruption. It's a tool of the powerful. And that's it. that's it right there. If you want to hold Vladimir Putin accountable, fine, do it. But also hold George W. Bush accountable, Barack Obama accountable, Donald Trump accountable, Joe Biden accountable, Tony Blair accountable, Dick Cheney, all of them. Hold all of them accountable. Hold all of them accountable. Not just the one that you currently don't like. It is ridiculous. And it does just, it means that it's not the law. It is just corruption. And it's just being used as a tool for the powerful in order to perpetuate the narrative and their current proxy war. And that's all that is. And so it's just, it's mind blowing. But it really is just the audacity of doing it right now with the anniversary of the My Lai massacre and the Iraq war right now, like right now. Ugh. Could it be a more obvious distraction away from our own garbage? So, I mean, that's fun. Yay. I mean, let's have some more ridiculous banter back and forth and some more stupid rhetoric that means absolutely nothing. And, oh, it's so annoying. It's so frustrating. I'm really over it. This week, I'm just over. I'm tired. I've been sick. I'm just over. I'm over everybody at this point. Okay. So, don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter if you want, at Sarcasm Stardust. I'm there all the time, literally all the time. I tweet all the time. But also you can follow my Substack. It's mistywinston.substack.com. I do a write-up every single day of the guests that we have on the show, including the links to all of their stuff. So it's an easy place where you can find and support their work. So definitely check that out so you can keep up on all of that. And then also, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest that you would like to hear on TNT Radio? Or perhaps you have a topic that you feel we should discuss? We want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website and help us make a difference right here on TNT Radio.
Delivering the facts.
Source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio. TNT. TNT.
All right. Very excited to welcome back my good friend, David D'Amato. He's an attorney, businessman, and independent researcher. He is a policy advisor to the Future of Freedom Foundation and a regular opinion contributor to The Hill. His writing has appeared in Forbes, Newsweek, Investors Business Daily, Real Clear Politics, The Washington Examiner, and many other publications, both popular and scholarly. And his work has been cited by the ACLU and Human Rights Watch, among others. Hey, David, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hey, Misty, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me. I saw that you were sick this week, so I'm hoping you're feeling better.
I am finally, yes. It's been a long week. I felt like death most of it, but we pushed through. It's fine. I got some medicine though. Medicine's starting to kick in. I'm still. It's hard for me to breathe a little. I have bronchitis, so it's all hard for me to breathe still. So if I feel or if I sound a little winded, that is why. And if I get a little coughing spell, I'm sorry. I apologize in advance.
Cough away. I'll take the mic.
Okay, good. Good. That's good. See, it's good that we're on the same page and I'll just mute and cough my head off. So what do you think about this Putin thing? It's very interesting timing, no?
It's quite interesting. I mean, I think... I think the influence that the United States has over some of these international bodies is clear in the way that they selectively prosecute. And that's what we're seeing here. Of course, I agree with, I'm with you. I particularly like what you said. War itself is a war crime. Yeah, I find it interesting when the conversations about war crimes are very interesting. I mean, to your point, we know that there were, at the very least, hundreds of thousands of civilian deaths in Iraq alone. And many of those people were, women and children. And that's just civilians alone. So when we're talking about war crimes, we've got to cut through the ideological holds that the United States and its empire, its global empire, has on both the popular, the popular conception of something like what is a war crime, and further again the grip that they hold over global bodies like the International Criminal Court and the UN and so on, and of course the IMF and other such global bodies that are supposed to be that sort of pretend to be, I guess, neutral or something. The United States clearly has the upper hand over those international systems.
Yes. And it's honestly just so frustrating. Because listen, of course, Vladimir Putin's guilty of war crimes. And I would love to see him and every other war, like all of the war criminals need to be held accountable.
They need to be
not
held
just
to
the
account.
One that. Yep. Yes. And there is no greater batch of war criminals than the United States. I mean, there just isn't. You know,
there's
it's not
no
even
doubt
close.
About that. No. Yeah, it's not even close. And the idea that that's even controversial in 2023 just shows you how effective the United States sort of branding is in the ability to pull the wool over people's eyes. I think, you know, to your point about how can people be really this dumb, it really does show that a lot of the ideological, you know, substrate of this system is bound up in, you know, pretty deep psychological manipulation. I mean, you see the payoff of, you know, having to say the Pledge of Allegiance every day, at least in, you know, our generation, like that pays off at the time when we decide to invade countries and violate their sovereignty. I mean, we talk in the U.S. we talk a lot about, you know, the sovereignty of countries' borders, and certainly that's been the big line on this war in Ukraine, and that's all well and good, but you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and the United States kind of just makes the rules, and it's subject to none of them,
right? That's what's so fascinating about it, is that we do not, like, we profess to claim about to care about all of these things, but we don't actually follow through it. Like, especially like sovereignty, we claim to care about the sovereignty of Ukraine, but in 2014 we orchestrated a coup and overthrew their government. You know what I mean? So, do we really care about the sovereignty of Ukraine? I'm kind of thinking no, we don't. What I mean?
No, I mean, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the further. Yeah, it is mind blowing. I think it's interesting to observe, and I think, you know, we've touched on this in the past. It's interesting for me to observe the difference in the headlines from, you know, from 2014 when the United States effectively orchestrated a coup and overthrew an elected government, and at that time in 2014. Even some people in sort of the mainstream kind of corporate media were willing to acknowledge this very obvious fact. And, you know, fast forward to now, it's just become kind of verboten to even, you know, people will get really angry at you if you suggest that, when it was not really particularly controversial in the past, you know, less than 10 years
like
ago.
Nazis.
That wasn't even.
Yeah, I know, exactly. But it's kind of like Nazis in Ukraine. Like, if you would have said maybe 16 months ago that there were Nazis in Ukraine, everybody would have been like, yep, totally. Mainstream media's covered that.
Course.
Like, it's a known thing. Everybody. And now everybody's, there's not that many Nazis. And they're not
that
powerful.
How dare you say that?
Like, how dare you even talk? But Vladimir Zelensky is a Jew. How dare you? You know what I mean?
Right, like, right. No, I mean, and honestly, like, you know, I'll get in trouble for this, but you know, he really should be ashamed of himself, because the people that he has aligned himself with and he's doing the bidding of, you know, basically the two major groups are the United States government and the ultra nationalist right wing, you know, racist Nazis who have somehow become at the center, you know, gotten to the center of power in that country. And, you know, also to your point, it's pretty clear that that our politicians and our, you know, quote unquote leaders really don't care about the Ukrainian people at all, because they have, you know, all of them on both sides of the aisle, or quite a few of them, have admitted openly that, you know, we're going to use Ukrainian bodies to fight the war that we want and that we've long awaited for. I mean, this is a result that the United States has been looking forward to. It's a real opportunity to try to weaken Russia using people who are not American. And so
yeah.
to me, that is really shameful and sickening.
It's
and
gross.
The idea that this would be, it is. And the notion that this would be good for people in Ukraine is just so far flung. It's like we, you know, what they need is a negotiated settlement. And, you know, and that's, you know, again, that's whether it's fair or not, it's do we want thousands more people to die? Do we want nuclear war? It's a cost benefit. Nothing in the world is perfect. And, what they need is the United States to actually do diplomacy and bring this to a stop. But that's not really
yes.
what.
No. And instead, we're doing the opposite of that. We're standing in the way of diplomacy. Mm-hmm. We are preventing it at every turn. We are escalating the situation. We are poking the bear. We're flooding the region with more weapons. And it's, yeah, we're doing the exact opposite of what we should be doing if we actually cared about the people of Ukraine. And that is just period. Like there's no, it's not up for debate in my opinion. If you care about the people of Ukraine, then you do whatever you have to do in order to find a resolution that is, at least good enough. It doesn't have to be perfect. Like you said, there's nothing perfect in this world. But the idea mm-hmm. that we're going to continue this conflict, knowing that it is the people of Ukraine who are going to suffer the most devastating impacts of this, that you can't then pretend to care about those people because you just do not. And it's gross to me that we are so openly willing to use the people of Ukraine as cannon fodder in a proxy war against Russia for our own personal interests. That is despicable. And I'm so tired of people pretending like we're the good guys because we're definitely not. Okay, we have to take a quick break. Everybody hang tight. We're going to be back in just a couple minutes with more from David D'Amato right here on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Lynn Shaw.
Women and girls, this whole society, we have been normalizing this sexualization of our children over the past few decades. And it has really come to a head right now in 2023. And where is all of this going? Let's review. Girls, we see, are promoted as being very sexy. Let's go on OnlyFans, quit your job as a teacher because you can make hundreds of thousands on OnlyFans if you take off your clothes. We know, big tech, there is no accountability. Our government, this is my opinion, are complicit in allowing all of this, where the algorithms are directing all of us online. But we want to stick to talking about the kids right now. Eating disorders, things about plastic surgery, cyberbullying. The kids are looking at what everybody else has. That old saying, you know, that the grass is always greener on the other side. And our girls are being marginalized. We also, I find this incredible in 2023, where I am sitting in the middle of New York City and we are promoting the full decriminalization of the sex trade. So how can we be pro-women and support this?
Lynn Shaw on TNT Radio.
A deadly virus emanating from Wuhan, China is sweeping across the globe.
Something is off.
The disease caused by the novel coronavirus has been titled COVID-19.
What we're being told doesn't add up.
So important in this crisis that we're in.
Congress passes a multi-billion-dollar bill that will bring...
There is no cure, no way to treat this illness. All we can do is wait for a vaccine.
All we can do is wait for a vaccine.
There must be a doctor out there who's questioning this.
I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. I'm the Vice Chairman of Internal Medicine.
The only chance to reduce the risks of hospitalization is early home treatment. We can beat this pandemic.
Patients actually think the virus is untreatable. There's such a focus on the vaccine. Where's the focus on people sick right now?
The pressure to suppress any hope of treatment is extraordinary.
Why the single-minded focus on the vaccine? What is that? What is that about?
That's really going to be the goal of investigative reporters to figure this out.
Unprecedented lockdowns, devastating economic damage, huge violations of personal freedom, families separated from their loved ones, all in the name of a medical emergency.
Things won't go back to truly normal until we have a vaccine that we've gotten out to the entire world.
And the hope we have of protecting our communities is to get a needle in every arm.
I am not going to follow what you are suggesting and let the virus slaughter my patients.
John, I'm watching what's happening. This is a treatable illness.
I don't think this is a matter of academic debate and confusion. What the evidence shows is that this is an organized criminal enterprise. They call this a business opportunity.
People need to know the truth.
We are witnessing the greatest organized crime in history, to the tune of trillions of dollars.
The biopharmaceutical complex is using censorship, propaganda, and manipulation to keep people living in fear. But what we need now is courage.
The Courage to Face COVID-19. Available at CourageToFaceCovid.com.
Info at your beck and call.
An earful of information.
Driving the news cycle.
Just tell your smart device to play
TNT Radio.
All right. This is TNT Radio. Welcome back to the Misty Winston Show. And I'm joined by David D'Amato. And I kind of want to switch gears with you a little bit, kind of. I mean, it still kind of all goes together, I think, in my opinion. But when I reached out to you earlier, you mentioned that you have an article coming out. And I'm so, I swear to God, it's like you read my mind, because I have been kind of looking into this very sort of thing recently. And like I sent you the Christian Parenti article. I discussed it like very briefly yesterday on my show. I hadn't had a chance to read it yet, but I mentioned it. But up until recently, I've been saying that we have an economy of war. We have an economy of death. But now I'm starting to see this shift where we now have an economy of crisis. And it's just one crisis after another. And that they're using that to facilitate a redistribution of wealth and restructure society, sort of. And you have an article that's coming out. So tell us a little bit about the article that you have. It's not out yet. It's in the pipeline. But tell us a little bit about this article you have coming up.
Sure, will do. So, I was really happy that you brought that that article by Christian Parenti to my attention, because I think he makes a lot of really good points and kind of zooms out so that we can see the big picture here. He says the system of crisis-prone, hyper-financialized capitalism seems ever more like a junkie. If it doesn't get its regular fix of public sector help, it'll simply collapse and die. And I felt like that was really interesting and true, because, one of the things I find fascinating about capitalism and, again, the ideological conditions or predicates that make it possible is, in this country, we love this idea that you're supposed to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and live frugally so you can save and so on. And our banks are, as he says, like junkies. They live, they live and they operate completely irresponsibly with no real guardrails on their behavior. I mean, and it's interesting too, because, we're talking about interest rates and, little people like me get, and like millions of others get stuck with the high interest rates, while the banks always seem to have a steady flow of, extremely cheap credit available to them from central banks. And, they're able to sort of create their own money too, because we know they don't have ours. they just continue to lend money that's doesn't actually exist anywhere. So this points to some of the major contradictions in capitalism, and the reason why we continue to see these insane cyclical crises that seem to appear again and again. And every time one happens, it seems that the aftermath is further consolidation of wealth and political power in the financial system and in the the 1% essentially. So I was glad that you pointed me to that one. It's he makes a lot of great points.
Yeah, I came across that late last night. I was like literally just sitting down at my computer. I was like 10 minutes out from my show, and I was just scrolling through Twitter, and I just happened to come upon it. And I was so mad, because I was like, if I had more time, I could totally do a thing on this. But that's why when I messaged you earlier, and you're like, well, I have this article, I'm like, oh my God, this is perfect. Like, this worked out perfect.
No, completely.
And I love Christian's article too, because the first sentence. He cracks me up. On Friday, March 10th, 2023, Silicon Valley Bank, SVB, died of COVID.
Yeah, right.
And then all right, it's a little more complicated than that. But I mean, kind of, because I think that really, and I think that that's, COVID has really drawn what I just said earlier into sharp relief for me, that it's not just that we have an economy of war anymore. We do. I mean, obviously, we still do. But we have now kind of shifted into also having an economy of these never ending crises and using those crises in order to, like I said, facilitate that kind of redistribution of wealth, to consolidate power. And COVID was huge for that. I mean, holy cow. Holy cow. I mean,
yeah,
it was,
couldn't agree
I mean,
more.
Hand over fist. They were bulldozing money to the top 1% over the past 3 years.
Yep.
And it's crazy.
Yeah.
No accountability.
Absolutely. It created, you know, big opportunities for easy money for the right people. And, you know, of course, most of us are not in that right people group. So it's, I think COVID was, and, you know, again, people are going to listen and they're going to take, you know, things out of context and say that I'm like denying that COVID existed. It's like I had COVID. I know that it was real. But I think what the point is that, you know, I don't think the government was, you know, twisting its mustache, like, you know, hatching a plan. I think it saw the opportunity to test drive some of the most like insidious, you know, forms of social control and fear-based psychological manipulation, and, you know, and tried to see basically how far they could push it. I saw a clip from the very beginning of the lockdowns the other day that I had sort of forgotten about, but it was, you know, it was Anthony Fauci on stage with Donald Trump, and Fauci was giddy. I mean, he was like visibly giddy that he had this opportunity to test out the lockdown method. And, you know, it destroyed so much of the economy. And to Parenti's point, at that point, you kind of need, you know, you need people needed some money back in the system. But how much of that made it to regular folks? That's the problem, I think, is, you know, as with the housing crisis and in the last, you know, it seems like only yesterday that we're in the aftermath of that crisis, and now here we go again. I think it's just you know, it's a cyclical thing at this point. It's part of the contradiction of capitalism, because you have this system where it's designed, you know, purposely designed to redistribute wealth upward. And when that happens, you have a tiny group of people with basically, you know, all of the money. I mean, I saw, I forget where it was. It might've been Oxfam, but they were talking in this piece about how the richest 1% have taken about 2/3 of the $42 trillion of wealth that's been created in the past 2 or 3 years. So it's just absurd inequality in the world. And it's, you know, the connection and to, you know, regarding war, I think the connection between the two is clear. It's, you know, war is a way to distract people. War is a way to, again, redistribute massive amounts of wealth to defense contractors and the like. So, you know, and who are obviously intimately connected with both policymakers and our financial institutions. So we just have a system of runaway financialization of the economy when the real economy is probably either stagnating or shrinking. But, you know, the only recourse they have, I mean, and this is a point that I take from folks like John Bellamy Foster. And what's interesting is this is another example of where there's sort of a strange, perhaps unintuitive overlap between, you know, sort of right libertarians and Marxists, because, you know, Foster basically says that there seems to be no way out of the present, like, economic malaise that's acceptable to the power elite, except to restart the financialization process. So I think that's where we are.
Yes. I mean, and I don't mean to be like Debbie Downer here, but it's bad. Like, we're in a really bad place. And I don't mean to be super negative, but it's hard for me to find that there's any way out of it without, I mean, like just an unbelievable restart. Like, and I don't mean like a great reset. I mean, like the people are going to have to come together, rise up and fight back in whatever form you want to take that to mean. Because these people are not going to listen. They're never going to give up this power willingly. They're never going to give up this money willingly. It's going to have to be fought for. Unfortunately, we have let it get to the point where it's so, and that's what makes me so frustrated, is that it didn't have to get to this point. We could have, you know, stood up and fought back against this long ago, but because the propaganda game in the West is so strong, they were able to put us all to sleep and keep us all complacent and distracted. Meanwhile, they were taking over the entirety of the economic systems and rigging it all in their favor. And then they're able to use something like COVID, and COVID was massive like that, especially something like, I just blanked. What was the CARES Act? Good Lord. The CARES Act, massive upward transfer of wealth. I mean, that was monumental, and we're still not even seeing the full impacts of that. But it is mind blowing to me that we've allowed it to get, and it just makes me really sad, really depressed that we've allowed it to get to this point, because now it's
same
like,
same here.
Where do we go, David? Like, what do we do? Like, I get to the point where I feel very hopeless in this situation.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I mean, I'm not sure to be honest, because I see the acceptance of this system that we have, the tight, you know, this monopoly finance capitalism that we have, is basically, you know, it's basically like a religion. Like, it's doesn't seem to be susceptible to, it doesn't seem to be susceptible to criticism or, like, you know, critical inquiry. I mean, I don't know. I think it has to start with people. One of the things that strikes me all the time is that, as far as we know, there's one place in the whole universe where human beings live, and we allow a tiny, comparatively tiny group of people to dominate resources, to dominate, you know, to dominate our time here, literally to dominate our time here. I mean, and that I find really just, you know, it's scary. It's also fascinating. I mean, one of my big influences is this 19th century sort of land reformer and, I guess, proto-anarchist named Joshua King Ingalls. And he talked a lot about what capitalism is and, you know, what it really means, because at that time, you know, the propaganda was already kind of in place, where people were talking about capitalism as if it were merely a system of two like ordinary people treating and bargaining on equal footing. And, you know, it was clear to him and to others on the left and in sort of labor reform circles that it clearly wasn't that. So he called capitalism a system of reduction of the many to want, so that advantage may be taken of their needs. And I just felt like that was so, you know, it's so pithy, it's short, but it's right. It's just like, you know, they've taken everything, they've cordoned off everything of value so that they can, so that everybody just has to live paycheck to paycheck and their days are dominated. And that's part of the reason why there's a failure of imagination today about capitalism. Nobody really has the time to think about this stuff. And it's sad.
Well, and that's all by design too. That's exactly how they're able to maintain power and control, is because the average American person has to work two or three jobs, and they have kids, and they have to go to soccer practice and mow their lawn and go to the grocery store. And I mean, most people, if you have time to watch 30 minutes of like Fox News or MSNBC, right. you think you're doing okay for yourself. You know what I mean? Like,
no, totally.
And that you kind of have a grasp of what's going on. And most people don't understand that mainstream media is absolute garbage and is lying to you on a daily basis. I think that that's starting to change. We're starting to see the trust in mainstream media falling away rather quickly, which is good. That's, I cannot wait for the day that corporate media dies a horrible, painful death. It deserves it.
I know.
But I don't know how close we are to that. But it needs to happen very quickly because, in my opinion, mainstream media is one of the biggest threats that we face. They are the ones that lie us into all of these situations, right? They're the ones that lied to us about COVID. Ones that lied to us about all these wars. That's the propaganda arm of the empire, and that's what I mean. That's really the kind of front line of it, which is what I always say. I mean, the front line is always your ability to educate yourself and others. And if you can't have information, then you're never going to win. And that's why they spend so much time and energy and money and power trying to maintain that propaganda and trying to maintain that narrative control, because that's how they maintain power and control for themselves. This whole thing of watching us, and especially in the United States, because it makes me really sad that we have genuinely allowed ourselves to be beaten down to the point where we're willing to accept that this is the best that we can do. It's not.
Yeah, that's
we deserve better, y'all. I don't care who you are.
Failure.
I don't care who you voted for. I don't care what party you belong to. I don't care. Like, we could disagree on literally all of the things, and I am here to tell you, you deserve better than what we're getting in this country right now. Totally. And it's just, it makes me really sad that we have allowed ourselves to get to this point. We have to take another break, but hang tight, everybody. We're going to be right back with more from David D'Amato right here on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Gallup is out with brand new poll results on Americans' attitudes towards the Middle East, and some of the numbers are not good at all. Remember back in October of last year when former President Trump warned American Jews they had better get their act together and realize what they have in Israel before it's too late, noting that evangelical support for the Jewish state outpaced that of Jews in America. For that legitimate concern, Trump was labeled an anti-Semite by the ADL, the White House, and media. Of course he was. The aforementioned groups are made up mostly of Democrats, and Gallup has found that Democrats sympathize more with the Palestinians than the Israelis, 49% to 38%. That's an 11-point increase in Democrat support for the Palestinians in the past year. And to Trump's point, it's worth noting that some 70% of Jews in America lean Democrat. Independents are more sympathetic to Israel, 49 to 32%, but that's up 6 points for the Palestinians. Republicans, they're 80% to 11% in favor of Israel. Overall, the Palestinians register a new high of 31% support, while the 54% of Americans sympathizing more with the Israelis, that's the lowest since 2005. And you can thank the Dems and the biased anti-Israel media for those numbers. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Governments around the world are wasting billions of dollars in carbon capture and storage. Such programs are futile and opposite the benefit of enhanced photosynthesis for a greener world and improved crop yields. In November 2021, US President Joe Biden approved the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which allocated $12.2 billion over 5 years for carbon capture, utilization, and storage, the single largest appropriation of money for the technology in history. Other nations and many of the largest multinational corporations support this folly. Much of the funding goes to geosequestration, which requires vast amounts of energy to pump carbon dioxide deep underground into geological formations. The enormous costs have no benefit, and there's no guarantee the gas won't leak out over time with seismic events. Likewise, carbon stored in forestry projects can go up in smoke in a bushfire.
The conversation continues.
I don't believe it, and I think that's a terrible position that I am in, that I don't trust my government.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I don't trust my government either. That guy and I have something in common. This is the Misty Winston Show right here on TNT Radio. I'm joined by David D'Amato. So I wanted to ask you, because before I mentioned, we were on there's the anniversary of the My Lai Massacre, there's the anniversary of the Iraq War, and yet again, we're seeing ourselves lied into another very similar circumstance in Ukraine. And we were just talking about the fact that the COVID lies and the lockdowns and all of that stuff had devastating impacts. And we all know, everybody needs to know that that's coming again. More of that is coming again. They're going to try something like this again. And seeing as how the people who lived through Iraq are now falling for Ukraine, what are the odds that people are going to wake up and not fall for it the second time when something like this happens and they try to lock us down again and destroy our economy all over again? Because I don't have a whole lot of hope at this point, David.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, and this is one of the reasons why, and you know, I'm sure that you feel a similar way. It's one of the reasons why the anti-war issue, no matter what kind of other, you know, kind of labels over the years I've tried on, I really have always felt that that war really is the single most important. Not that there are not, you know, there are many important issues, but war is really the most important to me because, you know, the massive loss that that war causes. And it's interesting to me because I don't know, maybe optimistically, I did think that we were entering. I did think that we were maybe going to enter because of the sin. Eventually, it took a while for sort of ordinary folks to get there. But I think because of the cynicism around Iraq and Afghanistan and what, you know, horrible disasters they were in every possible way, I kind of did think that there would be a little bit more skepticism about future endeavors to, you know, participate in wars and invade countries and expand the empire. But there doesn't, you know, I mean, even with all the talk about China recently in the news, it's just designed to take people's eye off the ball. And I mean, China, you know, again, it's same with a similar point that you made about Putin. It's like, I'm no great fan of the Chinese government. I mean, no. I think that the Chinese government sucks, like every government, and particularly the most powerful ones. But it's interesting to me that now we've got all this kind of China panic, and you know, we know how that works because of the lead up to, you know, we had Russiagate, and now here we are, and that's interesting to me. And so we kind of know how it's going to work with China. And I think the problem there is just that China, if the United States wants to talk tough with China, I think it's going to find that the world has changed a little bit and China's not going to be pushed around. So, and that's a very scary thought. A direct conflict between the United States and China is not good for any ordinary person.
No. No, and it is freaking crazy to me, Dave, because it's not just China. We're not one, but two nuclear powers at the same time we're trying to cause issues with. The audacity and the arrogance.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
The absolute arrogance to think that you can push at Russia and China at the exact same time and there aren't going to be devastating consequences for that is mind-blowing. And now with the ICC doing the whole arrest warrant for Putin, even though it's like not even legally binding, it's just like it is propaganda. It's just another method of propaganda to make Putin look bad. But that's still, do you really think Putin's going to, I mean, so far he's, I mean, and listen, not a Putin fan. Here come the people say, see, she loves Putin. No, I don't. Yeah. But I mean, you cannot deny that so far he has been the adult in the room. He could have retaliated long ago, much bigger than he has. I mean, for 8 years, he warned the United States and the West that if you keep pushing, if you keep expanding NATO, that there's going to be consequences. I mean, he has been fairly patient in this whole situation. And at some point, there's going to be, I mean, how much can he take before, not to say that it's justified. I don't think, I hate war, period, end of story. I don't think, but at the same point, I also understand self-preservation.
It's and not he has unprovoked, seen the way, right.
It's not unprovoked. And he's, listen, all he has to do is look to Libya or, you know what I mean? Like the numerous other countries where we have, or Ukraine, I mean, to overthrow their government. I mean, we're already talking about there needs to be regime change in Russia. He's not an idiot. Yep. He knows how we operate.
He knows.
So yes, I mean, he's, what else is he supposed to do? Right. I mean, it's just so,
it's mind blowing. It really is. I mean, I think it's wild to me that that folks inside the Beltway and in the government really don't understand the changes that have happened. And, you know, we're quickly entering, and, you know, this may be the way that some of the United States bad behavior does eventually have to be dialed back, because I think we're entering into a multipolar, you know, world, and the politics in Washington are stuck in that, you know, brief moment between the end of the Soviet Union and, you know, now, basically, where the United States has been or has considered itself the, you know, the sole superpower in the world, and has developed kind of a renewed or an expanded, I guess, Monroe Doctrine, where it's no longer that you cannot intervene, that no country but us can intervene in the governments of the Western Hemisphere. Now it's kind of the United States really does believe that it has kind of an unquestionable prerogative to bully the entire world, and the international bodies go along with it. I mean, you know, NATO has expanded its mandate steadily, and now even NATO has you know, spoken the name of China. It's like, what does that, you know, that was not a part of NATO's mandate or mission. And so it's clear how the people in Washington think, and it's both parties. I mean, the Democrats have been, you know, they were the architects of this Russiagate business, and and they've tried to be very bullish, tried to be very sort of antagonistic, I guess, toward. I think we talked previously about, you know, like the thing that Pelosi did in Taiwan, and it's just irresponsible. I mean, and again, like, I'm not saying I like China or I agree with everything China does. I mean, people know that I'm an anarchist and I don't appreciate, you know, the state at all as an institution, but it does seem really irresponsible, because it'll be regular people on both sides that pay.
Yes. And that's what's so frustrating, is that, you know, it really is just that American exceptionalism, that absolute arrogance, where we really do think that we have the right to be involved in everybody else's business. And in fact, I just came across, Megyn Kelly did an interview with Putin in 2018, and there's a clip in it that they actually deleted from the, when they aired it, of course. But you can find it if you know where to look. If I can find it, I'll tweet it out so that everybody can watch it.
I would love to see that.
But he's talking about this very thing where... of course, because he said things that they didn't want aired on national TV. But he was talking about what you were just saying there, that the United States, Russiagate, Russia interfered in our elections, and that's what he was talking about. You know, the United States wants to come at us and say that we interfered with your elections, but how often do you guys interfere with our business? All the time. But that's right. And you think that that's okay. Like, and he said, in fact, that Obama at the time said that is their, that's our right. Like, we can do that. And that's the arrogance and the hypocrisy of this country, where, you know, we for 5 years we screamed about how Vladimir Putin interfered with our elections. And listen, I have no doubt that he tried. I have no doubt that many countries tried and do every time we have an election, as we do with every other major country on earth and every other country on earth. That's what we do. That's just the state of the world. But it's mind-blowing to me that we think that we have this inalienable right to do whatever we want. But if somebody else even does a tiny percentage of what we're doing to them, then it's worth, you know, going to war over, essentially. And it's very dangerous. And I don't think and I'm hoping that the people of this country will eventually snap out of it and start to recognize what's being done, because it's putting all of us in grave danger. And they'll do it with, like, the facade of national security. And it could not be any further from the truth. This is putting all of us in very grave danger, all of these actions.
And people should get it at this point. I mean, you know, I remember John Mearsheimer saying something about this, to the effect that, you know, he was, you know, like, just from a completely realist perspective, he was saying that, you know, to what we've been discussing, that the United States should be engaging in like genuine diplomacy and like real settlement talks. And he said, you know, some people might think that this would be like a loss for the U.S., like a defeat or whatever. And he said that, you know, in fact, it's Washington actually has a real interest in trying to bring this to a close, because, you know, eventually, I mean, again, like if the people in Washington were realistic, then they would see that, you know, pretty soon China, if it's not already, China will be the dominant player in the global, yeah, within the global system. And he was saying, like, in the future, we would need Russia to act as kind of a buffer or a counterweight, or, you know, to balance world power, I guess. And I think, yeah, the balance of power in the world would be really important to creating the kind of like sustainable peace that we're talking about. Because I think when you do have like a single dominant player, like the United States, you know, was for a few decades, I guess, after, yeah, the fall of the Soviet Union, it just doesn't, it isn't, it's like a, it, you know, it'd be the equivalent of, you know, a grown man basically in a WrestleMania with like a bunch of kids.
Right.
And that's, yeah, kind of what, you know, that, and the United States has just been kind of very willing to be that bully.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah. But we're definitely going to lose that role. I don't think there's any question. I think we are currently behaving as the wounded animal backed into the corner, because we know that, mm-hmm, the empire is failing. And I think at this,
exactly,
point it is a foregone conclusion. I don't think there is any way to come back. But I think that they are desperately trying to grasp onto those last clutches of power, just at least until they can figure out how to transfer them effectively without, you know what I mean? Like power is all going to go right back into the pretty much the same hands. It's just,
yeah,
going to get,
exactly,
shuffled around on the global scale. But yeah, it is just really, because, and when I say things like I'm about to say, people always like kind of laugh at me like I'm some crazy hippie or something. But why can't it's mind-blowing to me that we have to first of all, if we could stop elevating the worst possible people amongst us to positions of power, that would be great, because we're controlled by psychopaths straight up. And I'm not,
yeah,
like, that's not being overly dramatic. I think, yes, and they are not making good decisions, and they are coming from a place of absolutely no empathy. They have no humanity,
right,
and that's a problem. But it seems like, why is it weird for me to wish that we could all just cooperate and do our best to get along and use our words to solve our disputes and,
right,
like share
we teach
when
our
we need
children.
To. Right. You know what I mean? Like, just basic human decency. Why can't we,
yep,
behave like that? I mean, it's so frustrating.
Oh, totally.
Oh,
yeah. I think you're totally right. And it's part of the sort of the religious component of the system that we have, where people,
yep,
cannot imagine an alternative to, you know, the wars, the runaway financialization, the like totally empty consumerism that substitutes in our country for a culture. Like you know what? Be a crazy hippie. I dig it. I am a crazy hippie with you.
Yeah. Why is that not the goal? To get to a point where we can live in a world where we all seek to understand each other to the best that we can, to cooperate, to get along, to be civil with each other, to understand that we all inhabit this planet at the same time for a very tiny, mm-hmm, brief moment in history on the globe, on the grand scale. I mean,
yep,
in the universe's eye, we don't even make a blip on the radar.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So we're wasting this precious little time that we have on this little planet, fighting amongst ourselves over the dumbest of things, when we should just be seeking to understand each other and get along and work together, and figure things out and do what we can to help each other. And it's very frustrating to me that we have allowed these absolute maniacs to take so much power and control and lead us down this path. And so I am always going to seek to work towards that. If that makes me a crazy hippie, then so be it. Okay, so we only have a couple minutes left. Tell everybody where they can find you and find and support your work. Again, you can also find all this on my Substack, but tell everybody where they can follow you, David.
Sure. I'm on Substack. My newsletter is called The Peaceful Revolutionist. It's after a periodical published by the American radical Josiah Warren, who's really interesting. If you're not familiar, go look him up. And then my Twitter handle is DS D'Amato.
Cool. Thanks for coming. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I will obviously be in your DMs to get you back on the show very soon. I love these
chats.
Sounds
good.
And then I will be back next week, of course, with a whole other host of shows for you. A lot of amazing guests coming up next week. So make sure you tune in for that 11 p.m. Eastern right here on TNT Radio. As Julian Assange always says, learn, challenge, act now. And don't go anywhere, because coming up right after this, there is more for you right here on TNT Radio.